purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. As factually stated by Nanda Maharaj, Garga Muni, being a devotee, had no needs. Similarly, when Krishna comes, he has no needs, for he is Purna Atmarama. Nonetheless, he descends to this material world to protect the devotees and vanquish the miscreants. Parichanaya Sadunam, Vinashaya Chaduskritam. This is the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and devotees also have the same mission. One who executes this mission of para upakar, performing welfare activities for people in general, is recognized by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as being very, very dear to him. Na cha tasman anushyesu kaschin me priya kritamaha. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised this para upakar, and he has especially advised the inhabitants of India, Bharata Bhumiti Hailya, Manushya Janma Yar, Janma Sarkata Kari Kara Para Upakar. One who has taken his birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharat Varsh, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of other people. On the whole, the duty of a pure Vaishnava devotee is to act for the welfare of others. Maharaj Nanda could understand that Garga Muni had come for this purpose, and that his own duty now was to act according to Garga Muni's advice. Thus he said, "Please tell me what is my duty." This should be the attitude of everyone, especially the householder. The Varnashram Society is organized into 8 divisions: Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyas. Nanda Maharaj represented himself as Grihinam, a householder. A Brahmachari factually has no needs, but Grihi, householders, are engaged in sense gratification, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:44, Bhogashvairam Prashaktanam Tayaparita Chetasam. Everyone has to come to this material world for sense gratification, and the position of those who are too attached to sense gratification and who therefore accept the Grihastha ashram is very precarious, since everyone in this material world is searching for sense gratification. Grihasthas are required to be trained as Mahat, great Mahatmas. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj specifically used the word Mahat Vichalanam. Garga Muni had no interest to serve by going to Nanda Maharaj, but Nanda Maharaj, as a Grihastha, was always perfectly ready to receive instructions from a Mahatma to gain the real benefit in life. Thus he was ready to execute Garga Muni's order. Om Ganti Mirandasya Garanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhadantikam. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam. Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute. Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye. Panchakalpa tarubhyascha sindhu bhayeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Nanda Maharaj is treating Garga Muni as not an ordinary person. So externally he may seem like an ordinary person, but because he's representing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then that's not an ordinary activity. Prabhupada writes in one purport that it's like he has a light bulb. A light bulb holds illumination inside. So a devotee also has that illumination. And it's by the power of that illumination that we're able to preach. Without any illumination, it's very difficult to preach. Why? Because there's no impetus. It says that, we become a devotee not by reading many books. What's that verse? Tarako Pratishta, Shrutaya Vibhina. Shrutaya Vibhina. Many scriptures are many branched. And even if we study them all, a person who studies all the shastras, he won't become a devotee. Tarko Pratishta, and dry argument, that's no good either. If we try to understand the Supreme by, speculation, by studying the shastras and discussing them, it's recommended to study the shastras, but that's no good. Tarko Pratishta, Srutaya Vibhina, Nasavrishir Yasha, Mata Binyam. It says that, some people are considered very great sages, but they all have their own particular philosophy, so we'll become confused. And so it refers that Mahajanoyena Katasapanta, that we have to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajans. So we're following in the footsteps of, ultimately, Lord Brahma. Obviously, Lord Chaitanya came 500 years ago. But we're in the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. So we're well situated. and by that seed of bhakti that we get from another devotee, it ignites the dormant seed within us. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Sadhu Kabanoi. Savanadi Sudhir Chetta. Karya Udai. That, we don't have to do all these three things I just mentioned. But the devotional service is there waiting to ignite, and by the proper situation in the association of devotees, then that seed can start to ignite. So it's, in other words, where does bhakti come from? Devotional service comes from the bhakti that a devotee has. If we have some bhakti or some devotion, then we can be potent. If we don't have any bhakti, we won't be potent. In fact, it said that bhakti is the thing that that pushes us to preach. The mere fact that a devotee wants to go out and distribute books, even if there's only a little bit of sincerity, maybe it's for so many reasons, but if he's got that little bit of a desire to try and help somebody, that's actually that's coming from the bhakti which is received from another devotee. And so Garga Muni is in that particular situation, and Nanda Maharaj knows it well that this person is not an ordinary person, because Bhavat Vida Bhagavatas, what's that verse? Bodak Swayam Vibho Tirtha Kuravanti Tirthani Svantak Stena Garabrita. This is Vidura. He's been spoken to by Maharaj Yudhisthira. Vidura's gone on pilgrimage. He's been thrown out of the house with just the things that he stands up in. In fact, Duryodhana said, just leave him with his breath. He was pretty angry. And so Vidura took it as, this is Krishna's mercy. Now I can just preach. Now I can just travel to the holy place and speak about Krishna. He'd been engaged in politics, management, and, the thankless task of trying to convince Duryodhana, or especially Dhritarashtra, that you know, why don't you give the Pandavas the land back? But it wouldn't work, not at that particular time. So he went on pilgrimage, and straight away, after some time, he met Maharaj Yudhisthira. And this is what prayer he said. You know, in other words, he was just like Nanda Maharaj is eulogizing Garga Muni. Similarly, Yudhisthira is also doing the same. So this means that, you know, one who's intelligent, he can understand that the association of devotees is extremely rare. Extremely rare. Even in the Grihastha Ashram, it says that... what's he saying? You know, we'll come back to the Grihastha Ashram in a minute. It's a difficult one, that. So, what was there now? There was, you know, Vyasadeva, he took the transcendental knowledge from Narada Muni. You know, he knew so much. But he was still confused by Krishna's arrangement, of course. He was still, what do I do here? And I've wrote so many things. And then there's, you know, Maharaj Parikshit, Mahabhagavat king. But still he approached Shukadeva Goswami. And this is always the case. But, you know, we can take it so lightly in the association of devotees. We can tend to not associate on that level. But just by a little association with devotees, we can gain so much benefit reading so many books. So, you know, the power of association can't be underestimated. It's like a touchstone. You know, if we associate with devotees long enough, we'll eventually take on their traits. We'll eventually be able to... we have to be careful who we associate with. We have to associate with devotees who are in good standing. If devotees are a little bit loose, then we'll become loose also. So we have to be aware of that. So we're talking about the Grihastha Ashram. Because this is what it says in the purport, that, you know, the devotee goes from place to place. Not necessarily the devotee, but it's talking about the mendicant. That just like Garga Muni, they go from place to place and they don't need anything. But out of necessity, because they know the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they go to Grihasthas to try and remind them of what they should be doing anyway. They know, but they forget. Devotee Grihasthas anyway. And general Grihasthas, like in this particular situation now in this country, they don't know anything. So the biggest part of the population is Grihastha. And I was reading one by Gaurakishore Das Babaji, actually. I'll bring it into this section. He said that one devotee had just got married. We all know the story, anyway. And he said, what shall I do? No, this was to Prabhupada, actually. That was a different one. He came and he just got married, and he was asking him what duty... he was really asking for a benediction, but he was asking a question, what should I do in this Grihastha life? And he said, the first thing is so that you don't become complacent and disheartened or lack enthusiasm in this ashram. You should see your wife as the... he says, a Vaishnava wife is extremely rare. You should see her as a representative of Lord Krishna. As a goddess of fortune, in fact. Because she's a devotee. And if we see her on that platform, instead of the platform of just my partner, then we can remain enthusiastic in devotional life. So, yeah, it says that, you know, women are less intelligent than men. But, you know, this is actually in material life, that the general tendency of a conditioned soul is that we have a particular kind of body and it affords us a particular physical ability and a particular mental ability. That's all. It's nothing to do with us. It's just the soul's accepted that situation. So even if somebody says that, we shouldn't feel there's anything wrong. But I see in devotional circles, it's completely different. That, you know, a woman who takes up devotional service very seriously, then what does it say in Bhagavad Gita? Tesham satata yuktamam, bhajatam pridipurvakam, dadadi buddhiyogam tam yenamam upayanti te. And Prabhupada says in the purport, or the next purport, that even if we're not able to understand, say if we are less intelligent, and we're not able to understand the purport of what's been spoken by the spiritual master, or even in the Shastras, he says, then if the sincerity is there, the right attitude is there, then Krishna will give the intelligence. So there's no difference between a serious Vaishnav Prabhu and a serious Vaishnav Mataji. I'm okay using them, those terms. Did I get that right? Or should I use Prabhu for both terms? Anyway, I'm just using the old-fashioned terms because, you know, unless you're certain, you shouldn't change. You know that. Don't change unless you're completely certain. Anyway, it's a catch. You can't win. So where did we get to? Oh, yeah. So, Satam Prasangam Mama Virya Samvido. In the association of devotees, pure devotees, it means that when we hear topics about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I don't know whether anybody's noticed, at least for the first 5 or 10 minutes of a class, we sort of feel, you know, we go into another world, we're absorbed. And then maybe other things might start to happen. But it says the heart becomes satisfied and the ear becomes pleased. And by carrying on hearing in that way, one very quickly advances on the path of devotional service and becomes fixed in the process. And then by hearing alone, by becoming fixed in devotional service, what happens is that the taste comes. Prabhupada says in Bhagavad Gita that, you know, we should really try for this higher taste. While we don't have that higher taste, then we tend to be pulled away by so many distractions. So we're looking for that higher taste. And the higher taste is actually coming from hearing about Krishna. We may get so many temporary tastes from change of service or, you know, being feeling some elation for getting a posting or something, but it doesn't last for, you know, it might last about a few hours. But, you know, really, we're getting the taste from performing devotional service in the proper mentality. And by hearing, we're always hearing about the attitude of the devotees. It's not necessarily the word so much, but they're speaking about pure devotees, and they're especially in Bhagavatam, and their particular interactions. This is why Bhagavatam is so important, because we get in the association of devotees. You know, Maharaj Yudhisthira and all these devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they're actually preaching. Maharaj Yudhisthira, he performed the Ashwamedha sacrifice. Was it Ashwamedha? Rajasuha sacrifice. And he particularly arranged it so that all the kings from all over the world came for that particular sacrifice. And then right in the middle of the sacrifice, he said, "Who shall we offer the first oblations to, or the first prasad?" And at that time, on cue, Sahadev said, "Krishna." So, you know, there were all the great kings from around the world in one place. And they influence all their particular subjects. And so the Maharaj Yudhisthira was doing the first class preaching. Prabhupada is a typical example of Bharata Bhumite Hoyle Manasha Janma Ja Janma Sakati Kara Para Upakar. That Shastra's giving the particular preference or the benefit of being born in India. Why? Because very quickly we can take up devotional service with the background that we have. Things are changing. You know, it's becoming more materialistic in India, just like everywhere else. But generally, if we go into the villages, there's still the same mood of simple living, high thinking. just like Gaurakishordas Babaji. He was a Grihastha. I called him Vipin. Anyway. And he was in just an ordinary... He wasn't educated in any particular way. He was born in a Vaishya family. And he was a corn... He was growing corn most of the time. For so much of his life, he was married. And then at some point, he decided to renounce and go to Vrindavan. And then after a short while of being there, he took Babaji initiation from Bhagavat Das Babaji. So, you know, how many people can do that? You know, I mean, distributing books on the street. You know, if you've got that expectation, maybe we're shooting a bit high, you know, that this person, within a few short years, he'll be in Vrindavan on the banks of Radhakund chanting japa, you know, 64 rounds a day and living like the Babaji's. But, you know, it is possible if the situation's right. And so in the Vedic time, they would actually be able to do that. Bhagavat Gaurakishordas Babaji, he came straight from what is called materialistic life. You know, his materialistic life, what would it be? It would be, I'm just speculating a little bit, but for a person to take straight up devotional service and take initiation and become a Babaji, there must have been some devotional practice there. You know, in the field, growing in the daytime, coming back in the evening, listening to Bhagavatam, listening to Bhagavad Gita, Mahabharat, and then, you know, taking rest. Up the next day, you know, probably some meditation, some japa out in the field. So this type of life, this is what they call, sense gratification. So we'll hear a little bit about the difference between then and now a little later. So he's talking about preaching, and it's talking about the devotees who are fortunate to come from Indian background, especially if they're born in India, have got that advantage that they've got a head start. They've had the culture inbred within them, so it's not easy, it's not difficult to take up devotional service. It's more in the mode of goodness. And from the mode of goodness, Bhagavad Gita says, we can very easily take to pure devotional service. So, when Prabhupada came to the West, he had the same background, and he had a completely poles opposite situation, where he had to preach to people who got no grounding in devotional service, no grounding in pious activity at all. And so Prabhupada, he spent the first, I think it was 2 months or 2 weeks, in the Agarwal family's house. I think it was 2 months. And he didn't have much to do there, but that was one of the most important parts of his preaching venture, because in those 2 months, he's explained how he analysed the situation in America through this family, how the family was living. And he said, if we take one grain of rice when it's being cooked, and if we test it for it, whether it's actually ready or not, then we can understand that the rest of the pot is ready. And so by this one family, Prabhupada was analysing them, and he got the clue how to preach in the West. It's just like the Romans. We'll bring the Romans into it. The Romans, I didn't know this until just recently, but they had a big empire all around the Mediterranean and into the Middle East and into North Africa. And they used to... The policy of the emperor was that if you are favourable towards the people that we conquer and you train them properly, then they'll actually become very good citizens, and they'll fight for the Roman Empire and protect their own ground against intruders. So in other words, they didn't impose. There's also the British. I mean, they were a little bit more imposing, but when they went to America... When they went to India, they utilised the Indians in many ways to run the British Empire, because they had a Vaishya attitude. They were more into organisation. But they made a big mistake. What was that? They tried to make the Indians like the English, or at least the leaders. They preached to the intelligentsia class. It was Bhaktivinod Thakur's time. And so Bhaktivinod Thakur was one of those who was preached to on that platform. And what a benediction. They gave him the insight into the way the English live. And he preached through that to the English-speaking world. If we read his books, we'll find they're very, very attractive for a person who's brought up in an English-speaking country. But also it had its downside, is that what happened is that the intelligentsia used that against the British, and it ousted them from India. They used the same tactics. They were educated in diplomacy and so many things the British were good at, and then they used that to. And so it's in a similar way, it's not quite parallel, but we can understand that Bharata Bhumite Aila Manashi Janma Sakati Kara Para Upakar, that if the Indians are going to preach in the West, then we have to understand where they're at, where the British are at, wherever country we're in. We have to be able to deal with them on their platform, at least in the beginning of devotional service. And then later on, when they're a little bit well established, the higher level of preaching can come in. And so, the British are not so much into visiting the Hare Krishna temple. You know that. So, we have to put a lot of effort. If we're going to make these outreach countries from India Krishna conscious, then a lot of effort has got to go into dealing on the platform that they're at, and then gradually bring them up to the platform where they can come to, perform full-on devotional service. Otherwise, we might find that, they just drift further and further away. And, there's a few here, all right, but over there, it's like, where are they going? We have to reach out and pull them in, Both things are there. There's nothing wrong with solidifying what we have and making it very strong. But also, we have to be able to, bring up. The whole point of doing that is to be able to have the intelligence to preach Krishna consciousness in a suitable way to the people we need to bring closer. And then when the local people, the indigenous people, start to take Krishna consciousness seriously, then the movement will woof. We've got some pretty influential people amongst the Indian congregation. They're actually up there, aren't they? We've got a politician, a member of parliament. We've got lawyers. We've got people who've got, by British standards, they're well situated in the society. And so that influences society a lot. But they're a minority group. And the rest of them, when the Western high society starts taking Krishna consciousness seriously, then things will really happen. Anyway, just a few thoughts on that. So we finish at what time? We'll talk about Srila Gaurishikar Das Babaji for a while. Yeah, he was like Raghunath Das Goswami in many ways. He was renunciation personified. He never accepted anything material from anybody. Even when Bhaktivinoda Thakur tried to render some service, he couldn't. He wouldn't allow anybody to serve him. He was so, renounced from any type of material connection. And his diet, he used to get some parched. What's parched rice? Really, it's really dry rice, is it? I should imagine. Parched. I've heard of flat rice. This, what they call it? That rice which is very hard. What do they call that? Eh? Not puff rice. Flat rice. They soak it in the river, don't they? They soak it in water, then add a bit of... Well, they used to get parched rice. I don't know whether there's any difference. And they used to go to the Ganges and soak it. You know, it would take quite a while. You'd have to start preparing pretty early, wouldn't you? You used to put it in the Ganges, and then when it was soft enough to eat, you used to add a bit of salt and pepper, and that were it. And one of his friends, he actually took some festival prasadam. Now, we have a festival regularly, don't we? We take festival prasadam. But one of his Babaji friends, he took festival prasadam, and he didn't speak to him for 3 days. And then when he spoke to him, he said, you know, you are taking prasadam from, you know, prostitutes and people who aren't, you know, not following the proper path of devotional service. So we have to see that, you know, the way Gaurikishore Das Babaji used to preach, we can't preach like that. You know what I mean? Because it wouldn't be effective. I mean, you know, people when they heard about Gaurikishore Das Babaji's renunciation, they were fired up. Wow, one day I can be like that. That's what it's like in India, you know. But if you told anybody in the West about that, they go, oh, wait a minute, you know, you won't be able to see him for dust. So, yeah, there's a different way. So Gaurikishore Das Babaji, he seems to be a renunciant, you know, who had nothing to do with preaching, but he was doing so much preaching just by the way he lived. And, yeah, he used to take the clothes off dead bodies. I mean, I can't imagine anything more renounced than doing that, can you? Even if I tried, you go to a dead body, you know, take the clothes off it, wash them, and then wear them. So, he was the... eventually, he took... they call him Bansi Das, that's it, in his early life. Eventually, he left family life, he went to Vrindavan, he took initiation from Bhagavat Das Babaji. He was the disciple of Jagannath Das Babaji, the great Vaishnav commander, they call him, Jagannath Das Babaji. And he was running around Vraj for these different areas of Vraj for 30 years. He used to sleep under one tree. And his internal meditation was that he made garlands every day for Radha and Krishna. And he was completely absorbed in that activity. You know, internally, he was in another world. That was his simple service. And then after 30 years of being absorbed in his bhajan in that way, he went to Navadvip. And in Navadvip, he went round all the holy places and eventually resided on the banks of the Ganges. There was one place where there was some jungle, and he used to live in the jungle, and he was constantly remembering the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, just like it was the Vrindavan forest. also, he would go to Svananda Sukhada Kunj. This is the place where Bhaktivinoda Thakur lives. Has anybody been to India? Yeah? Only one. So it's on the other side of the Ganges from Sridhar Mayapur. But it's, you know, it's a very, very nice place. It's got a particular flavour to it. And it's the home of... there is the home of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And that's one of the parikrams that you go on. And Jagannath, Gaurikishore Das Babaji used to go there regularly and sit on his veranda. And also... He built him a little samadhi, not samadhi, bhajan kutia, so he could perform his japa. And he used to listen to Bhaktivinoda Thakur giving discourse on Srimad Bhagavatam. One day one king sent his assistants to ask Gaurikishore Das Babaji to come and give him his darshan. And Gaurikishore Das Babaji replied that, tell the king that if I come to see him, you know, I'll be very much influenced by that kind of association. So it's better that he comes to see me. Tell him to leave all his jewellery and everything behind and just come and associate with me on the banks of the Ganges, and we can perform bhajan together. So Gauri Kishore Das Babaji were pretty straightforward in his preaching. Vasharam. Well, that we've done Vasharam one, just a minute. Oh, there was one, Narendra Kumar Sen. He asked Gauri Kishore Das Babaji about how he could, obtain his spiritual body. What's my Siddha Swaroop? And Gauri Kishore Das Babaji was very, he says, we cannot understand these things by artificially thinking of Radha and Krishna. He says, we have to perform, what is it? Bhajan. He says, just that by that simple process. Sometimes we think, we've got to absorb. There's some mats who give the idea that we have to forcefully think of Krishna's pastimes, and gradually we'll become absorbed in that. I mean, this is okay if it's done in the right way. But coupled with that, should be the chanting of the holy name. This is the advice Gauri Kishore Das Babaji gave. He says, if you just chant the holy name and become absorbed in the holy name, eventually, the holy name, the real nature and form of the holy name will reveal to you. So this is very comforting. This is absorb ourselves in the chanting, and eventually the holy name will reveal itself to us. And simultaneously, what will happen then is that our own identity will be revealed. And as our own identity is revealed, our spiritual identity, then our service to Krishna will be revealed. And he said, that's all you have to do. Don't waste time in these, trying to understand Krishna outside of that. because in Nectar of Instruction, the same instruction is given, isn't it? Text 7, it says that, the jaundiced condition will be alleviated just by chanting the holy name. A taste for the holy name will come. And then in text 8 it says that if we just simply, absorb ourselves in chanting the holy name, we'll become absorbed in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So this is a pretty important book, The Nectar of Instruction. There's only 10 verses, and two of the verses are particularly talking about the power of the holy name. the one doctor, he wanted to set up a free clinic. He wanted to treat Vaishnavas and people in Vrindavan for free as his service to Krishna. And he says that, this kind of attitude, we can finish up in a very difficult place. He says, it can become materialistic. He says, the karma is very, very strong. He says, give up that activity completely. He says, and just absorb yourself in activities which will be helpful for giving devotional service to others. So once again, Gauri Kishore Das Babaji was in the mood of preaching, as this particular verse is saying. And he used to chant, he used to have his bhajan kutia was a latrine. He used to chant in the toilet. because one reason was that he was so disgruntled with material association that he'd prefer to, associate in that situation, they associate with materialistic people. And also the other side was it that because he was so well known in that area, people used to come to get benedictions from him and, just pester him on material grounds, so he wouldn't entertain that. The final pastime was that he left his body in November of 1915. And he just had one disciple. That was Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He wasn't looking for disciples at all. And that was a great difficulty that he was accepted as a disciple, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He was told by his father, Bhaktivinod Thakur, that he should take initiation from Gauri Kishore Das Babaji. And so he went to see the Babaji, And immediately put him off with so many reasons. So he went to see him again. He was persistent, and he said that, okay, he says that, come back tomorrow and I will ask Mahaprabhu. And so he came back the next day. He said, did you ask Mahaprabhu? He said, oh, I forgot to ask. And then he says, come back tomorrow and I'll ask. So he came up the next day. He says, did you ask Mahaprabhu? He said, yes, he didn't give his direction. And so and he'd been trying for a long time to take initiation. He said, look, if I can't take initiation, take shelter of you, I might as well end my life. And, Gaurikishordas Babaji knew that he would do. And he was going to throw himself in the Ganges. And so, Gaurikishordas Babaji relented. He says, okay, come later in the afternoon, and he initiated him. So, initiation is not a small thing, is it? he left his body on the 19th of November, 1915. And he's actually, in the spiritual world, his form is a Manjari, Guna Manjari. And when he left his body, he said that when I leave my body, I just want it to be dragged through the streets of Navadweep. It weren't that he wanted to be glorified, but that's how what he thought of himself. This is all this body is worth for. And so some of the Brahmins there, they took it seriously, the materialistic Brahmins, and so they were about to do that. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came on the scene. He said, I am the only disciple of Paramahamsa Gaurikishordas Babaji. So he says, nobody's going to touch this body unless they're actually spiritual. Nobody's qualified to touch the body of my Guru Maharaj unless they're spiritually pure. And so he gave, parameters by which they could do that. I said, if anybody within the last month or last 3 months has had a sexual relationship with a woman, then they can't touch this body. And so nobody came forward. These are Babaji's, renunciates. And then he said, within the last month, nobody came forward. Within the last week, nobody came forward. Within the last 24 hours, and nobody came forward. And so he took the body and he put it in Samadhi, in Navadweep. And the Pushpa Samadhi is in Vrindavan. So our mood should be one of Gaurikishordas Babaji as far as renunciation goes. Although we're using a lot of things in Krishna's service, that is actually yukta vairagya. But at the same time, our spirit of being renounced from this world should be exactly the same as his. We shouldn't want any material acquisitions for ourselves, only for the service of Krishna. And that pleases Lord Chaitanya so much. Lord Chaitanya. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he went to Radhakund in the 1920s, or maybe 30s, in a limousine. Now, at that time, to have a limousine in India, full stop, was like something unusual. And here we have this sadhu, who's, his spiritual master, the most renowned person on the face of the earth. And he goes to Radhakund with a limousine. So, in other words, everything's got its use in Krishna's service. But still, the internal mood should be like Gaurikishordas Babaji. And how do we know that? Because that's Lord Chaitanya's mood also. Mahaprabhura Bhaktagnera Vairagya Pradhan Yahandaki Prithihana Gaura Bhagavan. And it says when Lord Chaitanya sees the devotees of Lord Chaitanya have a renounced spirit. And when Lord Chaitanya sees that renounced, when he sees the renunciation of his devotees, he becomes exceedingly satisfied. He says renunciation is the basic principle that nourishes the life of Lord Chaitanya's devotees. So it's very important for us to be able to use the things in this material world for preaching, but be completely detached from them. And if we have that spirit, then Lord Chaitanya will protect us. How can we preach in the West without that protection? It's impossible. Other mats, they can't understand it. You can't understand how we're still preaching in this Western society.